Hey, Jorge, would you say that you have good taste in movies?
I don't know if I have good taste in movies, but I feel like I like what I like.
But does that mean that you think those movies, like, taste good? I mean, what does it mean to have good taste in movies?
You mean like if I ate a movie?
Yeah, exactly. Like, are certain movies, like, delicious or, like, you know, hard to swallow?
I think some plot lines are definitely hard to swallow. Yeah, but it's kind of an interesting question that you're asking me. You're sort of asking me, like, how can a movie taste? Or how can somebody have good taste in music?
Yeah, exactly. Like, why do we use the word taste to describe how we choose art or clothing or, you know, living room furniture? It's not like you're going to eat that stuff.
Well, it's probably just kind of a poetic analogy, you know?
Right. It's a little bit of poetry, right? We're saying, here's something we can't really describe, and we're going to relate it to something we can describe.
Jorge, I'm a cartoonist and the creator of PhD Comics.
Hi, I'm Daniel. I'm a particle physicist. I smash stuff together at the Large Hadron Collider to try to figure out what the world is made out of.
And you are a listener with really good taste because you are listening to our podcast, Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe, a production of iHeartRadio.
The most delicious podcast in the whole universe. But seriously, our goal on this podcast really is to take the universe and slice it into bite-sized pieces so you can chew them one at a time and really digest each one.
Bite-sized installments of knowledge for your ears, taste buds.
Yeah, exactly. We want you to really be able to incorporate these ideas into your brain, right? This is something you don't just swallow it like a pill. We want you to really, you know, take some time, chew it, enjoy it. Understand like the top notes and the back notes and the, I don't even know what I'm talking about here when it comes to names of various tastes.
Take your phone or whatever you're using to listen to this and kind of swirl it around a little bit, you know, let this podcast aerate a little bit.
Hey, I think this podcast has legs.
For tasting?
That's what they say about wine. You swirl it around and you look to see if it has legs.
Oh, I don't drink that much wine.
Well, I'm also complimenting your legs, Jorge.
I did shave them this morning.
What? I didn't want to hear that. Nobody wanted to hear that. No, nobody wants a mental. Well, maybe some people out there do want a mental image of Jorge shaving his legs.
But I think the point is that there are words that physicists use sometimes to describe physical phenomenon that is kind of weird to use, right? It's kind of like they're used for other things in the English language.
Yeah, and we've talked about that a few times on this podcast recently. We did a whole podcast about spin, in which you rightly insisted that we should have called it like spin, because it's not spin, it's like spin. But there's an important point there that we're sort of extrapolating. We're saying, here's something weird and unknown, but it's sort of similar in interesting ways to this thing we do know. And so let's give it that name so we can associate these two ideas in our head.
Yeah, I am a grumpy person when it comes to nomenclature. To naming things. I'll take that mantle.
I've heard you do this yourself about your own work.
What do you mean?
Sometimes you introduce your comic, and if you don't get that flash of recognition, you say, oh, PhD Comics, it's like Dilbert, but for academia.
Yeah. I think analogies are a useful thing in the English language, and that's why I use the word like, you know.
But we re-lean on these heavily in physics. I mean, when we talk about things being particles.
Wait, metaphors or analogies?
Metaphors, yeah. And I would admit that we often use metaphors when we should be using analogies. But that's basically all we do. You know, in physics, we try to describe the unknown. And what can you do when you describe the unknown except relate it to the known, right? So you're like, what is a particle like? It's kind of like a little spinning ball. Oh, it's kind of like a wave. You know, how does this thing work? It's kind of like this other thing. And that's the job of physics, is to say, here's all these weird disparate phenomena. Can we describe them using similar ideas? So there's you know, there's a good intention there. It's not like physics is trying to deceive people by saying this has spin and this is a particle and this has this flavor. We're doing our best to try to connect these things to ideas that are already in your head to make them easier to understand.
And so today on the podcast, we'll be talking about... What do quarks taste like?
That's right. What do quarks taste like and what do they look like? Because in particle physics, we describe quarks as having flavor, And we also describe them as having color. And so you might be wondering, like, what? How does a tiny little particle have like a color or a flavor? Like, can you taste one particle at a time? What does that really mean? Are these guys being literal? Are they being metaphorical? Are they being analogical? What's the word there?
Yeah, poetic, you know, wrong, perhaps.
There you go. And we will be open to the possibility that physics has taken too many liberties in bending the English language to describe what we've learned.
Yeah. So, and there are a lot of examples like this in physics, right? Especially particle physics, because you're dealing with some pretty weird and unknown things.
Yeah. We basically always have to do that when we're describing these tiny little weird things we call particles. We're always relying on things that we understand. Even the whole idea of a field. You know, like we talked about quantum fields and electromagnetic fields, you know, you're relying on your understanding of how these things work. You know, a field in general is like, I imagine like a field of wheat or a field of grass, you know, like thinking about how things change over a plane. So everything we do basically is some sort of poetic or non-poetic extension of the English language.
Today, we're in particular talking about quarks, right? Because quarks have both color, flavor, and spin. But they actually don't have neither color, flavor, nor spin.
No, they have like flavor, like color, and like spin. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Podcast done.
Podcast over. No, we're going to dig into exactly what that means. But I was curious what people thought. So I went around the campus at UC Irvine and I asked people. First, I asked them, hey, have you heard of a quark? And most people, you'll hear their responses. But if they hadn't, I asked them, well, would you believe me if I told you that these tiny particles had flavor or color?
Wait, if they had heard of them, you would ask them if they knew that they had flavors.
That's right. If they had heard of them, I asked them if they knew about quark flavor and color. And if they hadn't, I said, would you believe me if I told you that they had flavors and colors?
This is like a multi-part question here. All right.
Yeah. Otherwise, it was just too short a conversation. Have you heard of quarks? No. All right. Well, there you go.
Those of you listening, maybe take a second to think about it. If somebody approached you on the street and asked you what do quarks taste like or what's their flavor or color, what would you answer? Here's what people had to say.
Have you heard of quarks? Do you know what quarks are?
I've heard of them.
Okay. They're supposed to have colors and flavors. Do you know what quark colors and flavors mean?
No.
Quark is a delightful, like, yogurt-y kind of a thing, so that's the first thing that I thought of.
Well, the question is, do you know what quark flavors are?
Wow. You're not talking strawberry, blueberry for the yogurt. I have heard of quark flavors, yes.
I have heard of quarks. Another thing, don't know what they are.
Did you know that quarks come in different colors and flavors?
No.
I wish I could say yes, but I don't. I've heard of them, but no.
Quirky people.
Did you know that quarks, the fundamental particles, come in different flavors and colors?
I had also heard that.
You had, okay.
But yeah. I can't tell you.
I did not.
No. All right, great.
Yeah, they're one of the parts of protons and neutrons.
Right. Did you know that they come in different colors and flavors?
Mm-hmm.
They do.
Can you explain that? Do they really taste and look different?
No, it's just a way that it's described, and there's up and down and I don't really understand too much how that works.
I would have a hard time believing that because, as far as I know, we don't really see the quantum mechanical side of the world. So I don't know how that would work exactly.
All right. A pretty delicious set of answers there.
That's right. Yeah. I was amazed to learn that there actually is a European yogurt product called quark that does come in various flavors.
Is that true?
That is true. I verified that via Google.
Well, technically that yogurt probably does have a lot of quarks in it.
That's true. We should relabel everything in the grocery store as mostly quarks.
Quarks and electrons.
Is that going to be a particle physics food company? Quarks and electrons. Yum, yum, yum.
That's right. You can have a patent for pretty much anything and you would dominate the entire global economy.
That's true. And that's something I think most people haven't really gotten their minds around. The fact that everything they eat is just made out of the same particles and it's made out of the same particles in basically the same numbers. You know, you have a spoonful of yogurt and you have a spoonful of, I don't know, what's something healthy, ice cream or lentils or whatever, then it has the same particles in it. They're just arranged differently. So the thingness that you're eating, the yumminess or the grossness comes entirely from how those particles are put together, not what they're actually made out of, which endlessly fascinates me. That was a bit of a digression, sorry. But on to the topic of quarks being tasty. Maybe we should first remind people what a quark is and where it sits in the sort of hierarchy of particles, and then dig into their flavors and colors.
All right, yeah. So let's break it down for people or remind them. What is a quark, Daniel?
It's a delicious European yogurt, apparently.
All right, and what flavors does it come in? And what color is it?
It comes in strawberry and blueberry. No, a quark is, as far as we know, a fundamental particle, right? So if you look at the stuff around you, then, you know, stuff is made out of atoms, elements of the periodic table. You dig into those atoms, of course, there's a nucleus surrounded by electrons. And inside the nucleus are protons and neutrons, right? Protons being positively charged and neutrons being neutral. But inside the protons and neutrons are these particles we call quarks. And there's either two up quarks and a down, or two down quarks and an up. And that gives you protons and neutrons. So even at the smallest level, everything is made out of these little pieces that are arranged differently. The same basic building blocks can give you protons or neutrons. You just sort of different numbers of the stuff and arranged differently.
Right. Because I think most of us learn about the atom in high school, right? And we learn that there's a little nucleus with protons and neutrons and then little electrons flying around them. But the thing you're saying is that those things inside the nucleus are not actually things. They're just kind of configurations of smaller things.
Yeah, well, they're things in the same level that you're a thing, right? You're a thing and your configurations are smaller things. And those smaller things are configuration of smaller things, and on and on and on until we don't know when. In the end, everything is made out of these particles, and they really are the fundamental building blocks of like all the matter you've seen, all the matter you've tasted, all the things you see in the night sky. You know, those stars out there, they're made mostly out of quarks. The planet under your feet is made mostly out of quarks. Your hand that you're looking at right now is made mostly out of quarks. The brain you're using to hear this podcast is made mostly out of quarks. But two quarks in particular, up quarks and down quarks.
And they are, as far as you know, fundamental in the sense that you can't split them any further, or they're not made out of even smaller things themselves.
That's right, as far as we know. But that's mostly because we don't have enough power to break them further. And, you know, there's an interesting bit of history here that for a long time, people thought protons and neutrons were fundamental particles. They were the smallest things we had found yet. And then people came up with an idea that there might be particles inside the protons and neutrons. And, you know, they called them quarks. But inside the field, there was a debate for a long time about whether quarks were real. Like, you know, are they really there? Or is it just something we use in our calculations that helps us figure out how the math works? And there was sort of a lively debate for a while until, you know, we actually saw quarks by breaking open the proton and interacting with them directly.
Right. But you don't actually see the quarks, right? Like, you don't detect the quarks. You detect what they turn into or what they break into.
That's right. Quarks by themselves don't hang out very long. They have such powerful forces, the strong nuclear force, that they gather other stuff around them very, very quickly. So you almost never see, in fact, you never see a free quark, a naked quark just by itself. It very quickly just grabs energy out of the vacuum and dresses itself up. But they're very shy.
Who wants a bunch of physicists to see them naked? I mean, I think a lot of people can relate.
I won't answer that question. I'm not qualified to speak to that question.
But so you've never seen a quark by itself. You mostly see the bits of it. But from your theory, you can piece together that at some point in that shower of stuff, there a quark existed.
Yeah, exactly. And also on the other side, right? Remember, we're colliding protons. So when we start out, we collide protons. But protons are basically just bags of quarks. And we speed them up so much that what's actually interacting are the quarks inside the proton. Because the energy of the quark, the energy the quarks have when they're moving in the beams is much, much bigger than the energy that's holding the proton together. So you can basically just disregard that. So on one hand, you can think of the Large Hadron Collider as a proton collider. But really, we think of it as a quark collider, because it's colliding these bags of quarks against each other. So while we've never like individually seen a quark by itself, we have a lot of pretty direct evidence that they do exist.
So you're telling me you even name your own machines wrong. Like your machine should have been called the Large Quark Collider.
We need you, man. I keep telling you, we need you on these committees for the naming, well, because somebody's got to set
us straight. My services are available for a fee, Daniel.
I'll put you in the budget next time.
Namer. That's my Namer scientist.
Wait, you just named yourself the Namer?
I'm good. See?
If you're going to be, it's direct. I like it. It's simple. But if you're going to go for like, I'm in charge of naming stuff for physics, you got to be a little more creative than that, right? his grand naminess?
It's simple and direct. That's what I keep telling you guys. You need to be not poetic, the ye namer of particles.
No poetic flourishes allowed here, huh?
Well, so let's get into what a quark tastes like or what a quark looks like. But first, let's take a quick break. All right, so we're digging into quarks today. And in particular, this idea that a quark has flavor.
That's like right.
Flavor.
That's right.
Like it wears bling and wraps.
No, it gets even funnier than that because there are other quarks out there, right? And those quarks are heavier. So they're just like the up quark and the down quark, but they have more mass. And so we often refer to those other quarks as heavy flavor. And I remember in grad school telling my friends who were like biologists or, you know, political science grad students, what I was working on, I said, I'm working on heavy flavor. And to them, it totally sounded like a rap group.
Heavy flavor.
Yeah, I'm going to drop some heavy flavor on you today, man.
There is a well-known YouTuber who raps and sings about physics. You've heard of him, met him? I've met him. But have you heard of him?
Yeah, isn't it a woman?
No, it's a guy. He does a lot of a cappella songs about physics.
Oh, yes. I have heard of him, a cappella science. He's fantastic. There's a famous rap about the LHC that was done by a young graduate student. She's also pretty good. So this turns out there's a whole community of physics rappers out there.
Yeah, that's exactly what the world needs.
But back to the topic of quarks. The idea of flavors is that there's more than just the up quark and the down quark. Those exist. Those make the proton and the neutron. But sometimes you can also make these other quarks. They're called charm and strange, top and bottom. And the thing that's interesting about those other quarks is that they're very similar to the up quark and the down quark. They're like copies of those quarks. They're just heavier.
So is that kind of what happened? That at first you only had two quarks, up and down, and then you discovered more quarks. So you had to come up with other names.
Yes, exactly. The first they had the up and the down, and then they found the strange quark. And after that, they found the charm quark, and then the bottom, and then the top quark.
Because I wonder if physicists thought that there were only two, so they went with up and down. And then they're like, wait, there's another one. What do we call this one? Side, left, right, front, back?
No, it actually did happen that way. There were these particles that were kind of weird, so they called them strange particles, very creatively. And then when they discovered that the reason they were strange was that they included a new kind of quark, they called that the strange quark.
And then there was one that was just particularly charming, and you're like, let's call this one the charm quark.
So we were saying that every quark has like two cousins or two versions of it. The down quark aligns with the strange quark. So then when they thought, well, there must be a fourth quark to balance it out, they needed to make it somehow like above the strange quark, the way up is above the down. So they were like, well, what's, you know, sort of in that category, but, you know, higher. So they went for charm.
Oh, I see.
And, you know, this is where the poetry is. They were like grasping for some sort of relationship to try to describe these weird particles using, you know, English. And so they did their best and they came up with charm. They thought charm is to strange the way up is to down.
I can see that in like an SAT question, you know, up is to down, yes, exactly. As strange is to obviously charm.
Obviously charm. That's exactly what we did. Yes, somebody was doing the SAT and that's how we named particles. And then when they found another one and it aligned again with the down quark, they called it the bottom, which is not a great moment of creativity, right? But once they called it the bottom, then they had to call the other one the top.
And if you find another one, it'll be the lower and the under.
Exactly. No, interestingly, we've actually proven that there are only three different flavors of quarks. So when we say flavor of quarks, that's what we mean. We mean either this first group, up and down, or the second group, charm and strange, or the third group, top and bottom. So there are three flavors of quark. And they're not strawberry, blueberry, and vanilla. They're, you know, that first group, the second group, and the third group.
Okay, so the idea is that first, you only had two up and down, and you discovered more. And so suddenly you needed a name that tells you, that separates all of these different versions of the quarks.
Yeah, and probably somebody was like, what can we do? How can we name it? And maybe they like went out for ice cream and they were looking at all the different flavors and they were thinking, oh, these things are all similar, but each is a little different, you know? And so I think they were grasping for something poetic there. They were trying to describe how these particles have relationships, but they're each a little tweaked version of the other one. And so, you know, flavor, it's not a perfect description, but it's not terrible either.
Well, it's weird because it's not really a quality. It's not really a measurable quality, right? Or quantity. It's just like a category. It's basically another word for category or another word for types.
Type. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's trying to describe basically the type of type or the relationships between these three types, right? Saying we have these three types of things, what's the relationship between them? And you know, to make it even more complicated, there's actually sort of like dueling ways to talk about this. Some people say, oh, there's three flavors of quarks. Other people say there's three families of quarks or three generations of quarks because they think that, you know, the cousin analogy works better than like the ice cream flavor analogy.
So there's debate even within the physics community about how good you guys name things.
I think the fact that nobody can agree on how to call them pretty much settles the fact that we didn't do a great job naming them.
But I guess what I'm saying is it's not a property that's like on a spectrum, you know, like a, you know, like a real flavor sweet. You can have something really, really sweet or less sweet and everything in between. But a flavor for quarks is not really... It's really more like strawberry or blueberry.
It's quantized, right? You're right. You can't be halfway in between one type or the other. You can't be half up down and half top bottom, right? That's not possible. You're either one or the other.
Well, I guess, but then the question is, do they have flavor? Like, is there something about quarks and their different flavors that is maybe analogous to real flavor?
I don't think so. I think it's a bit of a stretch. I mean, quarks do have flavor in the sense that they taste like stuff. Like the last thing you ate was made of quarks, and I hope it tasted good. But quarks themselves, you know, they have no inherent flavor in that sense. And this quality that we call flavor has, you know, only the most tenuous relationship with the quality that you and I think of as flavor.
Okay. So it's not like it's something about the way they react to other things, or it's not something related to... How other particles feel them. It's just sort of a name they use for like when you go to the ice cream store and there are different types of things to choose from.
Yeah, exactly. And again, I think it's trying to show that they're part of a larger category, but they are different elements in that category. Mm,
that they're all sold under the same freezer.
Yes, exactly.
Basically, exactly. Right? Like they're all sort of here all together and you can order one of them.
Yeah, that about sums it up. Quarks are all different varieties of frozen treats.
All right, so that's flavors. And so let's get into what color quarks are, because apparently quarks also have color in addition to spin, which they have neither of. But first, let's take a quick break. Quarks also have colors. You guys give colors to quarks. And so this one you're telling me is a little bit more than just poetic.
Yeah, I think this one really does convey something about how the property works, the relationships it has. It really makes some more sense if you think about it in terms of color. And this relates to how the quarks interact with each other. I remember that these quarks are bound together inside a proton or inside a neutron. And you might ask, like, what holds them together? And you're probably familiar with thinking about electromagnetism, like electrons are negative and protons are positive. And so they, you know, feel these forces. That's what holds the atoms together. Well, what holds the proton and neutron together is a totally different force. It's the strong nuclear force.
Right. And the strong nuclear force is one of the four fundamental forces, right? There's other big forces that make particles push and pull on each other?
That's right. We have gravity, we have electromagnetism, we have the strong nuclear force, and we have the weak nuclear force. And actually, we've already combined the weak nuclear force with electromagnetism, so you can think of it as three sometimes. But strong is its own. Yeah. Strong is it.
All this time I've been saying four.
You're like decades behind the time, man. You should like talk to a particle physicist. Oh, he'll fill you in.
I think I read that in a book that we wrote, Daniel.
I think I added a footnote with that caveat somewhere in that book. Yes, it's called the electroweak because it turns out that the weak nuclear force and electromagnetism are really just two sides of the same coin. That's fascinating. It actually is connected to the Higgs boson, which is also really interesting, but we'll talk about that on another podcast. But the strong nuclear force stands apart because, first of all, it's really strong, but it also has this really weird property. Unlike electromagnetism, which can be like positive or negative, so there's two different charges there, the strong nuclear force has three different charges.
Right, and I just want to add a footnote here that I actually agree with the naming criteria you have here, and that you called it the strong nuclear force because it's strong. Like, that's simplicity I can stand behind.
All right. I'll let people know that this one has your seal of approval.
The namer has approved it.
Not official yet. You're still the unofficial namer, right? Let's not jump the gun. But yeah, I'm working on it. I'm getting the paperwork through. Yeah, so the strong nuclear force has these three different kinds of charges. And you might be thinking, three, that's weird. Like, there's positive and negative. What else could there be? Not zero, right? But there's three different non-zero charges. And so instead of having just sort of one axis with positive and negative, you have to have sort of a weirder image in your mind because there's three different directions you can go from zero instead of two.
And by charges, you mean like, you know, if it's the electromagnetic force, you know, if I'm minus and you're minus, we're going to repel each other, right? So it's kind of like what determines...
That would never happen, man. That would never happen.
Which part? That you were both negative or that we repel each other?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm pretty sure we're pretty negative sometimes.
Well, as long as one of us is positive, it'll all work out. But yes, exactly. Two negatives repel each other and two positives repel each
right,
other.
But if it, so it's kind of like a label, you know, like... It determines what this force is going to do to the two of us.
Yes, exactly. It's just like a label. And in electromagnetism, there's two possible labels, positive or negative. And as you said, the same labels repel and opposite labels attract. But in the strong nuclear force, there are three different labels. And the math is kind of weird. Like if you have particles that have all three labels and you bring them together, they cancel out. Just like if you have an electromagnetism, you have a positive and negative, and you bring them together, they cancel out to zero. In the strong nuclear force, you need one of each of these three different charges to bring them together to get zero.
So quarks, when it comes to the strong nuclear force, then you can be one of three things. And these three things are called color.
That's right. We call them color. We call them red, green, and blue. And the idea is that not having a color is called white, right, or colorless. And the idea is that if you add red, green, and blue together, you get white. And so it's trying to describe the mathematics of that, right, this weird business where you need one of each of the three things together to cancel it all out, to get back to zero. The other thing that's like that in our world is color.
But wait, let's take a step back and maybe let me understand this a little bit. So if I'm one kind of strong charge, like if I'm red, and you're blue, what does that mean between the two of us? Are we going to repel each other or attract each other?
We're definitely going to attract each other.
Okay. What if I'm like blue and you're green?
Then we'll attract each other.
Like what are the rules there between the three?
Right. And I see where you're going, that you want to make this comparison with electrons and protons and understand this like in terms of attraction and repulsion. That makes sense. But the strong force is just a different kind of beast. It's so powerful that anytime two quarks get near each other, any two colored objects, the energy between them generates more quarks and gluons and other colored stuff until they can combine to get something color neutral. And it's different from electromagnetism in another important way. See, the particle that carries the electromagnetic force, the photon, it's neutral, right? It doesn't carry a charge itself. So the electron, it can emit a photon and still be negatively charged. It doesn't change the charge of the electron to emit that photon because the photon is neutral. But the particle that carries a strong force, the gluon, it's not neutral. It carries two different colors. So what does that mean? It means that if a red quark emits a gluon, it changes the color of the quark. So it's like if an electron emits a photon and then becomes an anti-electron or something else with a different charge. Anyway, so for the color force, it's not as simple as saying two red quarks can attract or repel. What happens is that they interact like crazy, changing colors and shooting gluons everywhere until there's the right combination, like red plus green plus blue, to become color neutral or white. That's the only way the strong force is happy, the only way it can chill out.
But you're saying something weird happens when there's three of us. And I think this is a safe for work podcast here, so let's not get into what happens analogies for three
We're not advocating any of these arrangements in your personal life, right?
See,
What are you doing there, Jorge? You're using an analogy to get people to understand it, right? You're like making...
No, I'm trying to avoid an analogy because this is children listening to this podcast.
You're trying to avoid a very obvious and useful analogy.
So let's say there's three kids who want to play together and they're all different charges. You're saying something weird happens, like... All the kids will want to attract each other because they're all different.
Mm-hmm. And together they have no charge. Just like if a proton and an electron attract each other and they form a bound state, then from the outside they have no charge. Like that's hydrogen. Hydrogen has no net electric charge. If you bring together a red quark, a blue quark, and a green quark, then together they have no charge, no color charge. And that's what a proton and a neutron are. They're colorless. But they have colored things inside them, but those things cancel out.
So a plus and a minus, you're saying, cancels out. So like if I get a proton and an electron together, they add up to zero, basically. They become, nobody wants to be attracted or repelled by them.
Exactly. They're like a married couple. They're invisible in the dating scene. And in the same way, if for color, if you bring together one of each of the charges, except now there's three, red, green, and blue, then you get something which has no colored charge, right? It's colorless. It's neutral from the point of view of the strong nuclear force.
Okay, but what if I just get a red and a blue together? What happens then?
Then it still has a charge.
Which charge? Red and blue?
Yeah, it's a combination of red and blue, and there'll be a gluon. Those things will emit a gluon, and gluons carry two different colors. The math gets pretty hairy, but... they will attract a green quark. And if they can successfully attract a green quark, then it'll be neutral.
So they like being in threes, quarks.
Yes, because the strong nuclear force is so powerful that nature tries to make everything have no net color. Because it's so powerful that anything that has color automatically just like creates particles out of the vacuum to balance that color out, because there's so much energy in the strong nuclear force. And that's why we can't see quarks on their own, because they have a quark color and there's so much energy in that color, in that colored field, that it pulls new quarks out of the vacuum to balance it out.
So that's what happens if I get a red and a blue together, like a green will magically appear?
Not magically, scientifically.
Poetically, a green will disappear.
Poetically. Yeah, the energy of their interaction will get converted into the mass of another quark.
And then it'll be complete.
And then it'll be complete, yeah. And then it'll stop generating new particles out of the vacuum because that it'll be colorless. But there's another way you can be colorless. Like if you're a red quark, then if you meet up with an anti-red quark, like, you know, quarks have antiparticles, right? Quarks and anti-quarks. Well, anti-quarks have anti-color. So red and anti-red together make white.
And then what happens to them? They disappear or what?
No, they can form bound states. And we have particles that have just two quarks in them. They're called like pions. Pions are examples of like an up quark and an anti-up quark bound together. That only works if that quark is like green and the other one is anti-green, or blue and anti-blue, or red and anti-red.
I thought antimatter, when you touch it with matter, they annihilate and explode.
It can, yeah, but it can also form bound states.
This book we wrote is totally wrong, Daniel.
Turns out there's a whole field behind that, right? It's just scratched the surface. In the same way that, you know, like positive and negative charges can annihilate, but they can also form bound states like hydrogen, right? Just the same way like two things that feel gravity, like the Earth and the Moon feel gravity towards each other, but they don't necessarily automatically crash because there's so much energy in the Moon's orbit that it's stable, right? So even though there are forces between them that want to pull the Earth and the Moon together, the Moon is in a stable orbit. In the same way, electrons can be in a stable orbit around a proton, even though there's a force pulling them together. And up quarks and anti-up quarks can form stable particles together.
Well, I think the point is that you're trying to make is that because when you have three quarks of the different flavors and you bring them together, they sort of cancel each other out. That's sort of like...
Different colors, yes.
You're saying that's sort of like when you get color, like real, like a red light and a blue light and a green light, you're going to see that as a white light.
Exactly. Exactly. It should work the same. I mean, I'm not an expert on color. I defer to you as the artist. But that's the idea, that the math of quark color, the way they add up, is very similar to the math of real color, the colors of light. And so that's why they named it color, not because these quarks actually look like anything. Red quarks are not redder than green quarks, but that the math of how color works when you put them together is very similar to the math of, or how we think about how light adds up, the color of light.
Okay, so that does seem more appropriately poetic, maybe is the word for it. But I mean, it is still, I would say, a little suspicious to name a phenomenon in physics using an analogy from another phenomenon in physics, which is how light of different frequencies mix together and get processed by our eyeballs. Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. Yeah, absolutely. But I think this one, there is some poetry there I really do appreciate, because when I was learning about this for the first time as a graduate student, the analogy of color really did help me understand it. I thought, oh, it really is like color. That's pretty cool. And so it helped me understand it. And then I went further and I thought, well, maybe there is a deeper connection, because sometimes when things are similar and the mathematical structure mimics each other, then there really is a deeper connection, like with spin, right? We talked about how intrinsic spin is really another kind of orbital angular momentum. There really is a connection there. But in this case, I don't think there is. I don't think there's really any connection between quark color and photon frequency that makes any sense. It's just a helpful guide for building the construct in your mind.
Because I think the combination of red, green, and blue to make white is really just a human perception thing, right? Like if you actually take a photon that's red and a photon that's green and a photon that's blue, they're not going to suddenly become another photon that's white color, because there is no white frequency.
That's right. Yeah, it's a product of how your eye sees color, right?
All right, so then that means quarks do sort of have a color. They don't really have a flavor, but they do sort of have something that is sort of like color.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so weird and so odd that it really is helpful to draw on something familiar to say, this new property of particles we've never seen before is weird and bizarre and strange, but we have something familiar that you can use to base your understanding on. And I think that's pretty helpful.
So those are quarks and flavors. Now, here's a question, though. Can you have a red raspberry? Like, technically, you could have a red quark can be different flavors.
Yes, that's true. You can have red top quarks or red up quarks or red charm quarks, for sure. You can have red raspberry or red blueberry. I mean, now we're totally mixing it up. A red strawberry. I don't know.
A red blueberry quark.
Well, they have blue raspberry, right? That's a thing. I never understood that.
Oh, right.
I mean, there are red blackberries and black raspberries and black and red blackberries. And I don't know. I mean, we should get on the biologists, because they can name those berries pretty confusingly also.
Well, I think the overall conclusion is that scientists maybe should have been charged with naming things.
Not without adult supervision, at least, right?
Well, I hope that clears that question for the people who wrote in with that, asking for that explanation.
Yeah, I think people were reading about quarks and seeing this thing with flavors and colors and wondering, what does that really mean? And I think on the whole, it's confusing if you don't understand the technical aspect of it, because it makes people think of the familiar flavor and color that they have in their mind already. But once you dig into it a little bit, you start to appreciate if you think of it as just sort of a placeholder or a guide for how to think about this, you can appreciate what the physicists were trying to do. But on the whole, I think these physics words borrowed from other concepts are more confusing than they are helpful for the beginning student or the person just reading about a topic.
So that's the lesson. If physics confuses you, take a class and maybe it won't confuse you as much.
All right, everyone. And if you have a question about particles or the universe or something else really weird and strange, and you'd like us to explain it to you and show you how maybe physicists are not totally insane and crazy, write us and ask us to explain your question to feedback@danielandjorge.com.
We promise we'll answer with charm and strangeness.
Some days our conversation goes up and sometimes it goes down. All right. Thanks for tuning in.
See you next time.
If you still have a question after listening to all these explanations, please drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Daniel and Jorge, that's one word, or email us at feedback@danielandjorge.com. Thanks for listening, and remember that Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.